should talk about what's coming up tomorrow night, I guess. Or would you like to start with tomorrow night, or you want to start with tonight? Because it sounds like there's something
Well, let's going on. Talk about Tien a little bit first.
Let's talk yes. about Tien. Very
let's
good.
Talk about Tien.
Okay, Tien.
All right.
Do you know anything about that subject?
So you are, yes, let's talk about Tien. What is your background? How long have you been playing the piano? When did you pick it up?
I was actually born in Taiwan where, and I started piano. I started formal lessons when I was five, but my mom is also a piano teacher as well as a pianist. So I kind of was endowed with playing piano before I was even born.
Mm-hmm. You probably don't remember the first time you ever sat on piano.
So I started playing when I was three, but my dad said, "Oh, I think you better start her on some formal lessons because she's starting to get some really bad habits there." So I've been playing for a while. It's been great, and life as a musician, as a pianist, is in my world, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When did you know that you were kind of a special pianist, that you were, this was something that you were going to be able to make a living at, pursue for as just a career and a calling, so to speak?
Oh, well, I never thought that it was going to be a career. It was, or never thought about making a living either. Mm-hmm. It was just something that I knew I wanted to do. Forever.
Yeah.
And that hit me actually when I had a fall playing near the railroad tracks with my brother. I was 13, and I was with a group of boys who were all much older, and they were all running around, and so I was running after them, and I fell. I slipped on the railway, and I cut one of my fingers. And so I looked at my hand and I thought right at that moment, oh no, I can't play piano again. And that was the moment where I realized how important it was to me. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So by 13, you knew it was, kind of a big, it was a focus in your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was your mom mad at your brother?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. That's good. As Dino mentioned, I don't know if the mic picked it up, but you have been then sitting on the piano bench since before you were able to sit.
Yes. We had students all over the house all the time.
Yeah.
So your mother,
I'm assuming, was your first teacher, and then.
Yes, she was my first teacher, but she was actually, she's just brilliant because it's hard to have your mom as your teacher.
Yeah.
So even at the age of five, she made sure that I had another teacher that I can call actually my piano teacher instead of her serving two roles.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I just went over there and played like twice.
Yeah. What is that? What does that look like for a child who's gifted at the piano? Once you have your own teacher at five or six, what are they pushing you to perform? It's not chopsticks or anything anymore.
Oh, well, I started off just naturally because I was hearing so much music at the house with all the students coming in, and the younger students were playing from this little book called The Red Thompson.
Yep.
And
piano
so, yeah, so by the time I was three, I had heard the students play, so I said I want to play, and I played the whole book from beginning to end, but I didn't know how to read, and that's when they thought, oh, maybe we can let her keep playing by ear for a while, and having lessons to me was it was just a very natural. I don't think there was even a transition for that, just because that was environment, going forward, working with different teachers after we immigrated to the States, that was interesting to, first of all, language-wise, I didn't speak any English then, and we immigrated here when I was nine, and our first residence in the States was actually Napa Valley, And we would drive up to a nearby college there through the vineyards every Saturday to have our lessons, to have my lessons. And the teacher tried to, he's a college professor, but here I don't speak any English. So he was trying to just kind of speak in ways that helped me understand like rhythmic aspects and stuff. And it was hard. It was difficult to understand.
I imagine it would
even
be.
If they say music is a universal language, but as a child, you still need verbal communication to get something across, you know? So that was great. I mean,
did your parents speak English?
Well, in Taiwan, everyone is required to learn English from seventh grade onwards through the final stages of your whatever education it is you want that's beyond high school, even through graduate studies and stuff. Everyone is required to speak English or at least learn the language because we feel that it makes for the better evolution of a human person.
So they knew a little bit. They were able to, they knew the
language, but coming here to speak it was something else.
Sure.
It would be like if you were just studying musical theory and you're great at analysis and history, but if you're asked to go and play a piece, so to actually speak the language itself supposed to be a challenge and sometimes still continues to be.
Sure. We're talking to Tian Che. She is a pianist who is performing tomorrow night at the Panada Theater at 7 p.m. and also performing, or you're participating in an event tonight, I guess, put on by POAC. Should I turn to Dino here or Tone? Okay.
Tone, tell us a little bit about the masterclass at the Music Conservatory.
We reached out to the Music Conservatory because all of our artists that come here have to do an educational aspect as part of our mission at POAC.
Mm-hmm.
And so we reached out to the Music Conservatory to see if they had some students that wanted to participate, and they were super excited about it. So that's happening tonight in the Little Carnegie at 6 o'clock. And it's free and open to the public to come and watch. There'll be three students that she'll be critiquing.
Well, yes. I mean, I'll be working with them.
Yeah.
And hopefully, I mean, first I'll enjoy their wonderful playing.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe I'll crack some jokes.
that none of us understand. Some esoteric piano jokes.
Mm-hmm.
But I always look at masterclasses as a wonderful time to... it's great for the students to perform because it really is a performance experience for them because there are people listening. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, people attending the masterclasses are those who are interested in that specific instrument or that genre or whatever, what have you. And so for the students, I think it's a wonderful opportunity also. As far as the person that's leading the masterclass, I mean, I'm just there to kind of enjoy the growing talent and, you know, to see where they are in their development. I'm really looking forward to hearing whatever music that they're going to be playing.
So you don't know what pieces they've selected yet?
No.
Okay. And they'll come in and each of them, or one at a time, they'll play and then you'll take the stage and critique? Or how does it work?
I mean, yes. It will be in recital format. So, you know, they'll perform and there will be applause and they'll bow.
Okay.
And
you're not going to stop them 15 seconds into the piece and say,
absolutely
nope.
Not.
Yeah, okay.
No. You hit a wrong note.
For them, it's a performance.
So
watch that
you,
fingering.
What are you listening for then? And especially like that I would not hear. What are you looking for in these students? What kind of notes do you expect to give them? Assuming they don't hit a wrong note, you know, what kind of critique do you have for them?
Well, first of all, I want to say that hitting wrong notes is entirely fine because I hit plenty of those.
Okay.
I mean, Arthur Rubinstein himself said that with all the wrong notes that he's played in his lifetime up to the point of his life when he was talking about this was enough to make several records. Mm-hmm. So that's okay. I want the children to feel really relaxed if there are children and just enjoy playing. And I guess my goal is to see where they are in the piece that they decide to play and at what stage it is, you know, and help them give just general advice about how to bring it to the next level.
Yeah. Is it safe to say that you will probably have experience with whatever piece it is that they're playing? Like you will know how you would play it already.
Well, I think it's important to, when listening to music, one of the things that I find is really important for not just pianists or musicians, but in general, is whether or not that performance captivates you. And what is captivating involves everything from the dynamic range to the rhythmic flow to the silences that are necessary in music. And those could be rests, those could be fermatas, what have you. And all of those things are actually tell a story that's beyond the notes. So that's kind of what I listen for, because that really contributes to the musical message that you want to project.
Mm-hmm.
So
how do you describe yourself as a piano player? So, like, as opposed to opposed to your peers or your colleagues?
I don't know, a sweaty what makes, one.
Okay.
Definitely makes... powerful, I would say.
For sure. She once broke a key on a piano in the Grove Hotel in Boise.
I think it was more than one. Wasn't there like three keys that went flying?
Okay. What kind of?
It was not a good piano
issue. Okay.
No, it was not a very good piano. So.
Okay. Well, that's kind of an interesting aside. You know, when a trombone player travels with a band, they bring their trombone. But of course, you don't travel with your own piano, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. So how challenging is that when you're sitting down to play and, you know, the feel is different. You may have capped keys that are going to go flying off or whatever. You know, how do you deal with that?
You just go with it. You just go with it. Like, for instance, when the incident that Dinah was talking about, that piano was a little baby grand that had been pounded on so much that the keys were very loose already by the time I played. And one of the black keys just snapped off. And in the middle of a huge Liszt transcription that I was playing, the Don Juan Fantasy, and it just flew off. And so it snapped and it sat on the middle of the white keys, and I just tossed it into the audience. And then I just played, and my hands kept on moving, and I just tossed it, and it just startled everyone. And everyone was like, whoa. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, you know, they started to really pay attention by that point.
Yeah.
But it was funny. Okay, so last night, Tien had an evening with our local piano club, and I didn't even know there was. It's an informal group that gets together once a month, and they just play for each other and various pieces of whatever they happen to be working on. And it was at Deb Owen's house, where Tien is actually staying. Whenever Tien has come to town, this is her fourth time playing with us here in Sandpoint, and we need to find a place for her to stay that has a really nice piano that she can practice on. So Deb and John Owen are hosting her. And so last night you were talking about that. You were saying, well, when I'm at home, you know, she has a Mason Hamlin and a Steinway. But she goes, but then I go over to my mom's house and she has a Yamaha, and that kicks my butt, you know, because it's harder to And it's harder. It's harder to play. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what Deb has.
Yeah.
She has a Kawai, which is great. Kawai, Yeah. So I love meeting different pianos because, you know, even though I have two wonderful ones at home, you want to be able to play on any piano, especially the ones that make you work harder, and because they just do.
Yeah.
You know.
I didn't really realize that. You know. Yeah.
Me neither. Yeah, I don't know. What's your favorite piano? In the whole world, what's your favorite piano?
I would say the two pianos I have in my living room.
That makes sense. Yes.
But, yeah, so I don't have a brand specific. And, I mean, I recorded my two albums on the Fazioli in Vancouver. And I grew up playing a Kawaii. Actually, I grew up in Taiwan playing a Royal Upright from England. Mm-hmm. Well, we still have the Upright from Taiwan, which was a gift that my dad got from my mom as an engagement present.
Yeah, you can't let that go.
I know. Uh-huh. So we still have it. And so, but I grew up playing on the Kawaii. And then, you know, after school, my first piano was a Mason Hamlin, and but it was in 1927, which is a wonderful era for pianos, and that was back in New York. But I had to part with that piano, and I found a beautiful new home at Meadowmount Music Festival, upstate New York. And yeah, so you know, I have I love any good piano.
Is that the piano you had when you were at, Tien went to the Manhattan School of Music in New York. Okay. So you were in New York for a while after that too, weren't you?
Yeah, I stayed in New York for another 4 or 5 years after I finished school. And actually, I got that piano after I graduated from school the last couple of years when I was in New York, because I didn't have a place to practice. And after you graduate from school, you know, you're stuck as a pianist without your own instrument, unless you have space for an instrument or you can afford an instrument. And so what I did was I made sure to have a part-time job at school after I graduated the first couple of years so that I could sneak into the practice rooms and practice.
That's smart.
But then they caught on to that and forbid me to do that. You are forbidden. You can work part-time at school, but you can't sneak into the practice rooms anymore.
Right. Well, they kept finding those broken keys. that's funny. So you're forbidden from practicing on the on the equipment.
And so then, you know, and so I applied for some competitions. And back then, it's like by recording. And then I didn't realize that here I'm getting into competitions and into, you know, different places. And I needed a place to practice. So there was a great place in New York that allowed me to come and practice because there are such amazing people there. And that's the Steinway Gallery. And Steinway Gallery, in particular, this wonderful woman named Betsy Hirsch, who is still there at Steinway, and she said, "You are welcome to practice here anytime to prepare for your competitions." Mm-hmm. And so that made a difference. But as a pianist, you need a lot of time. Well I do anyway, to practice. So just going there for 2 hours a day or 3 hours a day was not enough. So eventually I decided that I needed my own piano. So that's when I ended up buying the first piano.
I saw you perform a recital at the Steinway Gallery in New York, maybe what, like 10 years ago or something. It was incredible. It was this beautiful, like, I mean, it was like a two-story building in Midtown that just full of beautiful pianos. Mm. And you were in one room and it was just, it was incredible. I was like, I know her.
Yeah, that's the Steinway Hall. Is unfortunately no longer a Steinway Hall the way it was. Now the Steinway Hall is new, but back then the one that Dino saw is the one that we went to.
Yeah, it was like on 57th or something like that.
It was across the street from Carnegie Hall, which is great because it's like, you know, like when I played one of my recitals at Carnegie, I was warming up on the piano earlier in the day or the day before, and there's something up with there was one note that was just there's this one note that wasn't quite in par with all the rest. So I went backstage and told them about it, and they were able to get someone from across the street to come right away, and it was fixed in like 50 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It was great.
Having a piano tuner on site is nice. Yeah.
So what is it like playing at Carnegie Hall?
Oh, it's great. It's really, I was very fortunate in that the first time I was able to do that because I won a competition. And there used to be this competition that awards New York debuts. And so that I did as a student. And it was a really memorable event. My parents came out and
Tian Shea is playing tomorrow night at the Panetta Theater. By the way, the piano, you mentioned that pianos from the 20s, you thought that was a great era of pianos. What makes pianos from the 20s different? Or from that time of year? Or time of what? Time
the
of
sound.
Year? Yeah.
The sound. The sound. The way they made pianos back then, the sound was just, there's something about, well, first of all, we also had the ivory keys, even though, you know, and so that that affects the touch a lot. And sound comes from touch. So there's a warmth, and there's a warmth from pianos in that era. I don't know if it's from the wood or it's the craftsmanship. And you don't have mass production like you do today with a lot of the instruments. So every piano is specifically not only different, but have really wonderful characters of their own personality. So there's a sweet spot for most pianos from that era.
Huh. Interesting. You have played here in town 4 times. And I know for sure you played at the festival at Sandpoint. Have you played at the Panetta before?
I have.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, yes, Tone and I actually brought Tian to play at the festival twice. The first time you came, you played Beethoven's Choral Fantasy with the Spokane Symphony, which was wonderful. And I think we got you a 9-foot, was it a Steinway or was it a Kauai? I don't remember.
I think it was a, I think that time was a Kauai. It was beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the second time you came, you played Grieg's Piano Concerto and also with the symphony. And people just loved Tian.
And you brought the Steinway that time.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
And tell the difference between like people say, oh, a 9-foot or a 7-foot. What does that mean?
Oh, well, yeah. Well, size does matter. Because when you have a 9-foot, you have longer strings, you have a bigger soundboard, and so you just generally just automatically have so much more sonority, and you know you really fill up the instrument with sound.
Yeah.
And the 7-foot, both of my pianos and at home are 7-footers, and I even have my house is carpeted. So that I dense the sound.
Mm-hmm.
So for a living environment, a 7-footer is, you know, a plenty size. Mm-hmm. And but for a performance,
especially outside, outdoors,
when she brought in the 9-footers, it was
yeah.
it was a treat.
and then you have played the piano at the Panetta once. POAC did bring you back a long time ago. Brought you to the Panetta.
Yeah, right, Marilyn.
So, yeah, exactly. Marilyn Sabella.
Yeah,
she brought Marilyn you Sabella. To play. Yeah. So what? And is that piano the same piano?
I think that piano will be the same piano that I'm playing tomorrow night.
Okay.
I believe.
So you played it.
It's a smaller grand, but you know, and the difference in the instruments, I mean, aside from the sonority and the colors don't really change except for the fact that you just get more of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some adaptation that you have to adapt a little bit if you're a younger pianist from a smaller piano to a bigger piano, because obviously you have to work a little bit harder when you have longer strings, because there's a little bit more to carry for your smaller hands. But as far as playing at the theater, say at the Panetta tomorrow, this piano, even though it's not a 9-footer, will be plenty for and great for this theater, because the piano itself is a projective instrument. And even though the sound decays the minute you touch a key, it starts to decay. But because the sonority of the piano and its ability to, you know, play more than just one note at once, the texture itself really carries when it's in a hall.
Mm-hmm.
So really, size doesn't matter when it's in a hall.
Hmm.
What's sonority mean?
Sonority meaning like the richness of sound.
Okay.
And the richness of sound that comes from the texture of how many notes are played. A lot of times, at the same time. Like, an orchestra has great sonority because of all the combination of instruments.
So it's that whole roundness of the sound as opposed to some linear sound.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Or I think so. That's the way I perceive it. But, yeah. You know, I mean, someone else might define sonority entirely differently. I think we all have our own definitions as musicians. Or even in a different genre, it might be entirely different.
Yeah. What are you playing tomorrow night? And how do you decide what your playlist is, I guess? Your set list.
Yeah, well, building a program is one of the most difficult things for me anyway. Because not only do you want the pieces to fit together, but you want the program to flow. And you also want the program to have something familiar and something new. Mm-hmm. And you want something that's long, not too long. You want something short, not too short. Or you can have a bunch of pieces that are really short. So then if you don't like this one, it'll be over in 30 seconds. You have more to come. Mm-hmm. And so tomorrow I'll be opening with Beethoven's well-known Moonlight Sonata. And everyone knows that piece really well. Mm-hmm. So that is perhaps my most difficult piece on the program.
Because everyone will know.
Familiar, yeah. Okay.
Then followed by Chopin's Preludes. And Opus 28, he wrote 24 Preludes, but I'll be doing 16 of them. And these are very short, and they range from 30 seconds to... The longest one is the Raindrop Prelude, which everyone knows really well as also. That's about four or five minutes. And so that's the first half, Beethoven, Chopin. And the second half, we will have four women composers. We'll actually start the second half not with a woman, but we'll begin with Alexander Scriabin. And Scriabin was well known for his harmonic evolution and his rhythmic flexibility, in that he makes like complex rhythms kind of melt together. They melt together into this color, and that really goes with him as a person, because he had this ability. He has synesthesia, so he was able to see color through music. And so I'll be playing eight of his short preludes. And why is he on the program? Because he was heavily influenced by Chopin directly, Chopin's preludes. And who both study, both Scriabin and Chopin, of course, study Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier, Prelude and Fugues, obsessively. And so, like any good composer would. And so I just thought that it would be fitting to put Scriabin on the program, of how Chopin actually influenced, you know, other composers to take the form of preludes to a greater level. And so followed by that will be Fanny Mendelssohn, and the older sister of Felix Mendelssohn, and Clara Schumann, and who married the wonderful Robert Schumann. And there's a great love story there. And I mean, she actually took her father to court because she really wanted to, you know, marry the love of her life, and he forbid. So it was a happy ending. They did marry, and they won their quest for togetherness.
And nobody got poisoned in the process. Poisoned dad or anything like that.
And so that's a set of three short pieces, and the next set of three short pieces will be Halina Ovcharenko, who is a Ukrainian composer currently living in the UK, and a short piece, a short prelude by her. And who's the second one? Florence Price. Florence Price will be on the program. She's the first African-American female composer to have her music performed by the Chicago Symphony. And during her lifetime, and she was also presented numerous times on Chicago TV. And during her lifetime, her music, her symphonic works were also performed and all throughout UK. So it's wonderful that her music is starting to become more recognized today. And then end of that short set will be Manuel Ponce, who is a Mexican composer and a wonderful songwriter. And we'll end the program with Franz Liszt, Mephisto Waltz number 1, which is a very colorful piece. So, yeah.
Okay. What and what happens if there's the audience shouts encore, encore, bravo?
Well, then
you come out and
then I'll just mm-hmm. come out and
bang the keys
okay. for a few seconds.
Okay. Mm-hmm. see what kind of damage you can do. Yeah. Well, it sounds wonderful and interesting. What happened? And at intermission, everybody can kind of take a break.
They can, nothing. Like, okay. I guess, down a bottle of whiskey.
Yep. Run across the street and come back. Yep.
There is concessions. There yes. are concessions, and the wonderful Panada volunteers that will be there at the bar.
And you'll have merch too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you will. You'll have your CDs, right?
Yes, yeah. I will have CDs. Yes, mm-hmm. Mr. Phil. Mr. Phil will be handling the CDs, so
okay.
he'll be wearing a hat.
Okay. he'll be the man in the hat. Okay.
The man in the hat. The man in the Panama hat.
I'm going to play something, a recording of something that you did off of Bach and Beethoven's mostly transcriptions 2. One of the CDs that will be available for sale. How did you decide on these pieces, for that matter? I mean, it's the same question for the set list, yeah.
Yeah, well, for recording, it's entirely different mm-hmm. because it's permanent. Once mm-hmm. you decide, it's there.
Yep.
You know, actually, the second album, the Bach and Beethoven, is actually the second volume of the Mostly Transcriptions, which is the first volume. And I came across wanting to do this because I won a Liszt competition some years ago, and I wasn't one to play a lot of music by Liszt, but. But I moved back to California, and my boyfriend back then lived in Hungary, and right outside of Budapest. And I thought, I found out about this competition called the Liszt International Piano Competition that was being held in L.A. And I thought, I should just try because it's a free ticket to to Budapest.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah.
And so I tried, and uh-huh. you know, I learned my Liszt, and I went and played a little bit of the requirements, and they said, great. Well, you didn't win first prize, so you're not going to Budapest, but you did win second prize, so you can go to Pasadena. Like,
great.
Okay, well, at least uh-huh. I'm going somewhere.
Yeah.
So then I played the program in Pasadena, and so I played the full Liszt program at Pasadena, and afterwards they said, no, we've decided that you have to go to Budapest. You must still want to go to Budapest, don't you? I'm like, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So so I had this Liszt that's in my fingers, you know, this program, and then all these people started to request Liszt programs, and so I started to learn different transcriptions, and just to build different programs back then, and then I thought, over the years I built some repertoire, and I had the offer to do my first recording, and I thought, I should just do it. What am I going to record? I can record some of the transcriptions and mix it with some non-transcriptions. And so it's called Mostly Transcriptions, the first album. And then the second album, I thought, instead of just doing Liszt, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of other music out there. Like, the first one has also Bach Busoni transcriptions. But the second one has, like, Beethoven, Wayne Levin, the Last Sonata, with a Beethoven Liszt transcription that's seldomly played. So I put some music on the second one that's a rare music. And the first one actually has a premiere too, a short American composer that was being recorded for the first time of that piece. But anyway, so recording projects are totally different from a performance project.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's archival.
Right, yeah. It's, this is on the permanent record, and now it's on YouTube too, where we're going to try and see if I can make this work. This is, I'm just picking a short song rather than play a short piece rather than play one of the 16-minute pieces on this one. So this is the Choral Prelude. I can't pronounce this. Beautiful. You know what it is?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, Bach Busoni.
Okay. I'll play that. And then when we come back, let's talk a little bit about POAC and what else is going on. Besides just the concert tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, the concert with Tien Shea is at the Panada Theater at 7 p.m. Tickets available, at the door, online?
Yes.
Yep, both places. You can get them at artinsandpoint.org. You can come by the Pondre Arts Council Gallery at 313 North 2nd Avenue, right across from Jalapenos, and get them in person or purchase them at the door.
Okay.
And the doors are going to open at 6, and the concert is at 7.
Okay. Here is that piece that I mentioned before, as played by Tien Shea, and we'll be right back here on 88.5 KRFY. Thank you. That is Tien Shea on the piano, and you are listening to 88.5 KRFY. That was not a live performance, but here live in the studio, we are joined by Tien, whose name, by the way, is pronounced T-I-E-N-H-S-I-E-H, which I mentioned because you have a website at that, and you can go and find out more about this artist who's playing tomorrow night at the Panetta Theater. As well as the masterclass tonight at the Music Conservatory of Sandpoint. We're also here with two representatives of the Pondere Arts Council, POAC, whose website is artinsandpoint.org, I believe. And Tone and Dino are here. Tone Lund is the executive director, Dino Wall, the board president. And besides the concert that is coming up tomorrow night, what else is going on? What's new at the Pondere Arts Council?
Well, upcoming, we have Art Walk coming up, and you can, that is when all the businesses downtown, well, a lot of them, over 30, become galleries for the summer. So the opening reception will be on June 14th, and there will be probably, I don't know, around 75 to 100 different artists that are represented in that.
Mm-hmm.
We still have applications open if you want to, if you're an artist and want to be a part of it, or if you're a business and want to become a gallery for the summer. We do put out a map, and people do visit all summer through September. And so that opens on June 14th.
Okay.
And then we have the Arts and Crafts Fair in August, on August 10th and 11th.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always fun.
Yeah, that's fun. You know, the downtown, the you know, two core streets are blocked off, and there's just 120
booths, but okay. we've had about 160 applications so far.
Mm. So it is a juried, you know, it is a juried, you know, art show, and so it's you'll see a variety of things, but it's more than an arts and crafts fair.
Yeah. Definitely has to be the artistic side. There's no screen printing or things like that.
Yeah.
Everything has to be originally generated.
Yeah. And you have classes going on at POAC,
yes.
Including a watercolor class that
Carrie is going to
take. Carrie's on the hook for now.
We were just talking about that while we were listening to Tien's beautiful music. Yes, I just want to make a real plug for that, because that's something we have the Joyce Dillon Gallery. Joyce Dillon, when she passed away, bequeathed the Arts Council, a sum that she wanted to go into this kind of thing. And so we created the Joyce Dillon Studio, and it's affordable art classes for adults. And I do not consider myself to be an artist. My brother got all those genes, but I've taken jewelry making and
stained glass
and printmaking and weaving, and there's just all sorts of classes. There was one last week with cartooning, but you can take some classes are one-offs where it's just going to be 1 3-hour class. But if you really want to get into something like watercolor or pastels or oils, then there's classes that can go like, you know, four weeks or so, and you get better and better.
Yes. Learn as you go. Lifelong learning, Carrie. I think you should do it.
Yes, I think you should too. And this new space, we're just so grateful. Our new gallery, like Tone mentioned, is right across from Jalapenos, and it has a beautiful gallery. And we've been doing this for these first Friday openings of the new art shows that we've had each month, and we've had like a couple hundred people come to those, and it's just a perfect space. And so it has the gallery in the front, and then the offices of Tone and Claire, our visual arts coordinator, and then in the back is the studio for the classes. And so it's a great space, and it's really made POAC, it's really made our mission come
taken us up a notch.
It's
a great setting.
I mean, after years of kind of moving around town, it seems like you found a permanent home here.
Yes, we finally have.
Just absolutely awesome. And the other thing we'll be announcing at Art Walk is, because that's a wonderful thing about POAC, is it's visual arts and performing arts. And so we'll announce our next year's performing arts season at Art Walk too.
And okay, speaking of the performing arts, is this the last of this year's performing arts series? Okay.
Yes.
Tien Shea is performing tomorrow night at the Panetta Theater, and do we call this a, is this a classical concert? Is this a classical contemporary? I don't know. I'm not a musician. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Well, you better come and find out, Jack.
Okay. Explain. Yeah.
It's a wonderful concert featuring solo piano.
Okay. A wonderful concert featuring solo piano. But that is tomorrow night at the Panetta Theater, Art and Sandpoint for tickets, artandsandpoint.org for tickets. Mm-hmm. Or you can go to the office, the POAC office, or you can presumably buy tickets at the door of the Panetta Theater.
And the doors open at 6 and the concert's at 7.
You got it.
Okay. Well, I think I'm going to play a little more music and we can say good morning unless there's anything else. Did we miss anything? Did we forget to ask you any important questions? Anybody?
Thanks for having us. We're really happy to be here and great to see you, Carrie and Jack, on this beautiful Thursday
morning.
Good to
see you guys as well. Yeah. To meet you, Tan.
Lovely meeting you.
Very nice to meet you. I hope you come back to Sandpoint many times and stop by the station when you do. Okay. On this date in 1964, hold on, let me pull up my little cheat sheet here. Here's a don't look over my shoulder, Dinah.
I'm not looking.
Okay.
It's too late.
This man went to number one on the U.S. singles chart in 1964. So that's 60 years ago today. And at the time, possibly still, he was the oldest artist to hit number one at the age of 62. This is his biggest selling single, surprisingly. Remained on the Billboard Hot 100 for 22 weeks.
I know.
Who is it?
Perry Como.
Wrong.
Oh.
Sorry. Nice try. Any other guesses? No? Louis Armstrong.
Oh.
Uh-huh. The song is Hello Dolly. The song is not.
I love his Hello Dolly.
Well.
He's like, he has a little gruff voice.
Yes. You're in luck because we're going to play it right now.
Cool.
Yeah. On this date, 60 years ago. Here we go, and we'll be back with some upcoming events and more to talk about here on The Morning Show. Thanks for listening. Here's Louis Armstrong.
Hello, Dolly. This is Louis, Dolly. It's so nice to have you back where you belong. You looking swell, Dolly. I can tell, Dolly. You still growing, you still growing, you still going strong. I feel the room swaying, but the band.